You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Gold Hawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Gold Hawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
All right, here we are. We're on the radio now, Lorne, so you can start talking officially, okay? Are you all plugged in?
I'm all plugged in.
Lorne Fine. Lorne Fine is here, and he, of course, is our resident family and divorce lawyer, here to answer all your questions about all of these issues. And today, Lorne, we're going to start off by examining the definition of what is known as the matrimonial home. We've often talked about that in past shows in terms of what it is. And you've got – what are you trying to show me there?
Do you want to – I thought we were going to go through the list first about the – from our last session. We had a list about top 10 reasons why people get divorced.
Oh, what – oh, that's right. What number – well, what number are we at?
We were close to finishing. We are number 7.
Okay.
Or number 8, sorry.
Okay.
And,
well, what's the next one then that we didn't
– do you want to go through that?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that first. Then we'll talk about the proper definition of a matrimonial home, what that means.
So let's just recap.
And these, again, are reasons
– this is based on my opinion, not scientific at all, but from my experience, the top 10 reasons why marriages fail.
Yeah.
So number 1 was financial problems.
Mm-hmm.
Number 2 was sexual issues. Number 3 was communication problems. 4 was abuse problems.
Yeah.
5 was addiction. 6 was dealing with other families and friends of the family. Number 7 was parenting problems. And number 8, where we are now.
Where we are now, okay.
Is completely from my opinion again, personality problems. Incompatibility. If, when people get married, they change over time, right? The person that you marry – may not be the same person 10 years down the road or 5 years down the road, and people change. And when that happens, sometimes it results in difficulties in their relationship, whether they can't agree about sexual issues or emotions, or there is hostility between the parties.
Well, they've just become different people.
Different
people. Yeah.
They grow apart.
Yeah.
Number 9. Expectation problems, expectation issues, becoming unhappy. People, I think some people have an unrealistic expectation of what marriage is, right? Marriage is not always romance and what you see in the movies. Sometimes it fades over time, right? The romance may fade. Reality sets in. There's bills to pay. There's work to be done. It's not always roses and chocolates and so
well,
on.
It's a partnership, isn't it?
It's
a merger. It's it's running a business, the family, in so many different ways, but running it together.
Right, exactly. It's a partnership, and that's exactly it. So some people get bored. And that's what happens.
Those would be the kinds of divorces, the last two situations you're talking about, where the divorce might be more amiable than for other reasons. I mean, you kind of drift apart. You kind of
you can
go your separate ways.
Yeah, it can be. I think that though, if you go to your different ways and the expectations change. It may also result in infidelity, right? That's when people start straying. So these are connected, right? There may be – people may maybe bored and may have an affair, and then it results in a separation.
But
sometimes – you're right. Sometimes it's just a matter of just moving apart and just realizing it and moving on.
Well, I mean, but of course you can't take the emotion out of this kind of situation anyway. If you come to a divorce, there are going to be in varying degrees a lot of emotion involved. That's what makes your job kind of tough from time to time.
There always is. It's very few where people treat it like a business and say, okay, we're separating. Let's do this with no emotions and let's just move forward. But that's why you have a lawyer. You have a lawyer who's objective and not emotionally involved and can give you objective advice. And that's why, you know, we've said this many times, people should consult a lawyer if they're separating, because the lawyer can give you objective advice. And, you know, God forbid if I ever went through a separation, I wouldn't act on my own behalf. I would get a lawyer because I would be too emotionally involved. I wouldn't be able to think straight.
Well, that's – and that's the part maybe that people don't readily think of. It isn't just to get a lawyer to necessarily represent your interests and all that sort of thing that lawyers do, but it's to be that kind of unemotional, detached person who can, keeping your own interests in mind, the interests of your client, can sort of be the steady hand and the steady voice.
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, now we're at number 10.
Last one is just – time problems. You know, it's it's sometimes very difficult to maintain a balance between family, friends, work. You know, all these parts of an individual's lives have to be balanced, and sometimes people don't have that balance. Maybe you'll work too much and you're not spending time with your family. Maybe you're out with your friends too much and you're not spending time with your family. So maybe you're not working and you're just spending time with your family, right? Everything has to be balanced, and sometimes when that's out of whack, you know, I have many situations where one spouse isn't working hard enough and the other spouse says, why am I supporting you, or why aren't you working hard enough, and things fall apart.
Yeah.
Or situations where someone's spending all their time at work and not at home, right?
Can't be good.
Yeah, it can't be good. Yeah. So, you know, it's like any relationship that you have, whether it's with friends or family, with a marriage, you have to work at it, right? It has to. It should come easy, but you have to dedicate yourself.
By the time they get to you, they're working at their divorce. They're not working at staying together.
Right.
Although you've said from time to time, you'll get people who will decide to try it again.
Oh, yes.
Because isn't that what lawyers are supposed to do? You're supposed to say, are you sure about this? Yes, you're obligated to do that.
Yeah, when you're signing a divorce application, you're obligated to say, have you thought about marriage counseling? Mm-hmm. Are you sure you want to do this? Maybe we should mediate this instead of going to court and so on. Most of the time, people look at me like I'm nuts when I'm suggesting that to them.
Yeah.
Because by the time they're sitting across from me, you know, it's a process, right? It may take years before they get to me. But you're still obligated.
They've had years to grow to not like each other even a little bit, right?
Yeah. It's a process.
Then what keeps people – I mean, flip it over for a minute. Then what makes a good marriage? You never know, do you, what couple are necessarily going to make a long-haul great relationship out of it, and those who won't. You go into it. I think there's a bit of a chance at the beginning. You don't really know, right?
Yeah, always. Listen, when I got married, my clients thought I was nuts, right? How could you get married after all the stuff that you see? But, you know,
haven't you learned anything from all those cases?
My clients said, what are you doing? But, you know, you take a chance. That's what life is about. And thank God I have a good wife.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we've said this before.
And she would say that she has a good husband.
She would say she has an excellent husband.
I see.
The key to happiness is yes, honey. Whatever you want, honey. Whatever you want, no problem.
No, you don't mean that. No, that you can't do that either. That's humoring your spouse.
No. Sometimes, from my personal opinion, sometimes people get too involved and they have to win. And sometimes you have to compromise. You always have to compromise. And sometimes you have to give in. And you know, a happy wife is a happy life, right?
But there's still that allure there, isn't there? People still, if they discover they're in love with somebody else, in a vast majority of times, they want to at least think about getting married, about making it a partnership, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, you can also, you can also live together as common law spouses, and it's still a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people, it's important to have that, you know, marriage license, and it's important to have that certificate to say, you know, you're legally together. But you can also live common law.
But if you live common law, is there a role for you as a divorce lawyer?
Well,
sort of. I mean,
there's still going to be, we discussed this previously. There's still going to be support issues. There's still going to be property issues, but a little bit different. It's different than being married. There's, you know, the Family Law Act specifies how property is going to be divided if you separate, but not so for common law spouses. So it's the act is geared towards married couples, not so much common law couples as far as property is concerned. But, you know,
yet you would still have clients who have been living common law, and there are issues of ownership,
absolutely,
children to look after, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's it's common law is probably more difficult as far as separating property is concerned than as opposed to married couples.
Does common law favor the man or the woman?
Neither.
Particularly?
No,
not
neither.
Really.
No, it's all about contributions to the marriage or to the relationship and what your contributions
were. Well,
then
does living common law favor the person with the big income as opposed to the person with the small income?
It favors, I would think, the person who made the contributions as opposed to the person who did not make the contributions to the relationship.
Well, I guess
whether
that's
it's
what
property. Well, if one person makes more money than the other person, then there's support issues.
Yeah.
Then let's say the husband, the male partner is making money. He would have an obligation to pay spousal support to the female partner, even though they're not married. But when it comes to dividing property, you know, you're looking at contributions, who bought what and what your contributions were to the property.
Who put into the partnership,
as it were. As opposed to a married couple where that's not important. Who contributed, who bought the matrimonial home, right? We're going to talk about the matrimonial home.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a difference if the husband purchased it or the wife purchased it. It's treated as special property.
Which, of course, brings us to that definition of what exactly is the matrimonial home.
Right. So
it doesn't apply in common law, first off.
Right. There's confusion out there about what a matrimonial home is. And it's special. It's treated as special property under the Family Law Act. So what is a matrimonial home? The definition of a matrimonial home is firstly one party has to have an interest in the property. And two, it has to be ordinarily occupied as a family residence on the date of separation. So they have to live in the house on the date of separation.
So it can't just be a property one of the spouses owns somewhere.
Right.
It has to be, in fact, the home.
Right.
Yeah.
But you can also have two matrimonial homes. You can have a cottage. You can have a regular house. You can have
– Can you have three?
It'd be hard. You know, let's say you know, as far as the cottage is concerned, let's say you go to the cottage every weekend and you're using it as a regular residence, then it's a matrimonial home. And because it's defined as that property, and there's all kinds of special characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
One characteristic is that let's take a step back. So when you're dividing property under the Family Law Act, you're dividing the increase in your net worth from the date of marriage to the date of separation, right? Your increase. And you're splitting the difference between one spouse and the other spouse. They're both net family
properties. To equalize it,
exactly.
That's, in fact, the basic principle
behind the marriage,
isn't it?
And you're trying to equalize your net family property. So the idea is everyone walks away with the same amount of money, basically.
Yeah.
That's the idea behind it.
That's the idea. It doesn't always work out that way.
Well,
you
try to make it work out that way.
Yeah, of course.
So And so you're dividing the increase in your net worth. So if you have, let's say you have an RSP that's worth $1,000 on the date of marriage and it's worth $10,000 on the date of separation, it's increased by $9,000 and that's what you're sharing. You're sharing the increase of $9,000.
So that would be shared equally between the two partners.
That's part of your net family property, right?
Yeah.
Now for a matrimonial home, what's different is you get no date of marriage deduction. So if you bring in a house and it's the same house on the date of separation, so you live in the same house the date of marriage as the date of separation, you don't get a date of marriage deduction. So that's important because let's say you had an RSP, like let's take the RSP example again. So you have an RSP of $100,000 and it's increased to $300,000 in the date of separation. So it's gone up by $200,000. But let's say you had a house and the equity was $100,000. And it went up to $300,000. You're sharing the $300,000, not the $200,000.
So if you have a house, you bring a house to the marriage, you're essentially at that point when you get married, you're giving half the house to your spouse.
Basically.
Basically, yeah. I mean, that's really what it is, right?
And that's why.
Should that be reflected in the vows, I wonder?
Well, people don't realize it. And some people do.
I hereby give you half my house since I brought the house into the marriage, right?
Well, so some people, you know, it's very hard to think about bad things when you're getting married.
True.
You're being optimistic and you're trying to think about the future together. It's going to be wonderful and so on. No one's thinking about the downside, right, that you split. Some people do, and that's when I get a call for a marriage contract.
Of course.
Right? And those are people who are smart and they're thinking ahead and they're saying, look, I'm bringing in a house into this relationship. I want to protect this house and I want to make sure that if I separate, I can take all that money out. Or if I'm going to split, I'm only going to divide the increase in the value.
Okay.
And you can be very creative wherever you want to do it in a marriage
but
contract.
But you can do that easily if you have that prenup that you can contract the spouse out of that original entitlement under
Absolutely.
The family law. Okay.
Absolutely. Right. You can okay. contract out of the Family Law Act dealing with any property issues. So you can say, if I split, this house is mine. It's not yours.
Yeah.
If I split, you'll get 10% of the house.
I don't think you'd want to bring that up during the toasts at the
Well, it's very important as well that if you're going to have a marriage contract that you have to do it well before the marriage.
Yes,
you can't say
the night before.
Night before, I'm not marrying you unless you sign.
But it's interesting. You can find yourself disentitled on some of the things that are in the Family Law Act if that prenup is in effect.
If it's valid, that's why it's important to do it properly, to have a lawyer, to do it well in advance, independent legal advice. Everybody has lawyers.
Okay.
Financial disclosure. Everybody tells each other, and it would be effective.
Okay.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.
All that lovely music brings us back to Lorne Fine here on Goldhawk Fights Back for You, where we are inviting your questions about issues that may arise in terms of family law in Ontario and divorce law. It's really the same thing, I guess, isn't it? I mean, it's all contained in that one piece of legislation.
Well, there's the family law.
Or do you call upon different pieces?
Well, there's the Family Law Act
that
deals with property issues and custody access issues and so on. The Divorce Act deals with getting a divorce, and it also deals with custody access issues or deals with support issues. So
there are those two pieces.
Mainly those legislations. There's Children's Law Reform Act. There's different legislation, but those are the main pieces of legislation.
Okay. All right. Here are the numbers if you have a question for Lorne Fine, 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740. Ed's on the line from Toronto. Ed, what's your question?
It's a question and a comment. I think I mentioned to you before it should be harder to get married long time ago when you were once went on to this subject.
Yeah, maybe
that
you
way with education, like on many of the things that Lauren has mentioned, would be cleared up ahead of time, eh?
I think people have said that more than once, yes.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
I agree with him at the final comments between you two that maybe they need to have a contract before they get married so it's spelled out clear what's involved in it, the home, how it's divided. Just if someone's brought a home into the marriage, they know that that's excluded. So there's no false expectations. And that the false expectations he was talking about and all that, you may find that by doing things like a contract, rather than a lot of people thinking that'll sour the relationship in the long run, actually that'll strengthen it. It'd be interesting to know common law marriages, if they survive without any strings attached better when those property issues don't show up as what you contributed and things like that into a marriage and that sort of thing are excluded, eh? I wonder if they ever did a survey how that would come out, because people might work harder at staying together and not being so flippant, if you want.
I don't know what you're driving at. You mean if they live common law?
Do exactly everything spelled out like in a contract.
Oh, I
like
see
Lauren
what you mean.
Was saying at the end, which is kind of a good idea if you do that in advance. Mm-hmm. I agree with him.
Well, I think
you don't have the false expectations. You know, you only get out of something what you put into it.
Yeah.
Whether it be your feelings, your work, or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
I actually
Hey, that's why you need education ahead
okay,
of time.
Let Lorne get a word in here. And let Lorne get a word in here.
I actually teach a course at the Institute of Law Clerks of Ontario for family and divorce law.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that take the course, there's law clerks and there's also individuals that have gone through a separation. And they all – it's unanimous that they all say, I wish I would have had this course before I got married. I wish I would have known
really?
About these issues. Oh, yeah. So maybe a good idea is to have a mandatory course before people get married for a few hours just so people know their rights and obligations.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, that makes Ed, thanks very much for your call. That does make – but there's no provision for that in the law or anything.
Nothing.
I mean,
no.
You can – you can meet somebody at 4 o'clock and marry them at 5.
You sure
I mean,
can.
I
no, that's love.
This is not necessarily a recommended path to follow. But and Ed brings up the old saying that if it were harder to get married, maybe fewer people would try it. Right now, it's much harder, of course,
to get divorced,
dissolved,
right.
To have the marriage dissolved. Right?
Yeah, there's information is key, and it's unfortunate that people don't have the information. And a lot of people go in blind into a marriage.
But are you getting the impression? You may not have these figures right at hand, but are you getting the impression that fewer people on a per capita basis are actually getting married these days? Maybe they're living common law or
I don't
whatever.
Have, right, I don't have the statistics, but it's. Common law is more and more common. You see it, you really
yeah.
do. Less people are getting married, and
yeah.
people. It just seems that way. It's certainly as compared to say 10, 15 years ago. You're seeing much more common law couples separating than married couples.
And is there a negative side to that in your mind? Having seen both, having seen people who are dissolving a common law partnership and dissolving a marriage. Is there a downside if fewer and fewer people are actually officially getting married?
Well, I think that when it comes to separating, the law has to change as far as giving some rules dealing with dividing property for common law couples because it's really up in the air. It's very hard to tell a common law spouse this is what you're entitled to or this is how things yeah. are going to work out. So changes, there has to be some type of change in the legislation dealing with division of property for common law couples. If you're a married spouse, it's much easier for a lawyer to tell you, well, this is how I think property is going to work out.
Because it's spelled out, you
it's
know.
Spelled, there's rules.
Yeah, there are rules.
And it's just valuation questions and doing the calculations.
Yeah.
But for common law, it's very difficult. And, you can have situations where a common law couple have lived together for many years and then they split up and one spouse may not be entitled to very much property.
Well, I can see in a common law relationship where a spouse might find himself or herself highly disadvantaged
right.
after the split.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
more so than with a marriage where at least there are some rules that are laid down that that you're going to try to have enforced.
Right. There's a few Supreme Court of Canada decisions dealing with a breakup of common law couples dealing with property issues.
Yeah.
The facts are basically, they're a farm couple. They're living on a farm. They're common law. Together for many, many years. All of a sudden, this farm is worth millions and millions of dollars. And the husband says – the male
yeah.
common law partner says see you later and leaves the common law spouse, the wife, without anything, right? And
yeah.
so it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court had to work out all these rules and dealing with division of property for common law couples. It's very difficult.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
1250 Goldhawk Fights Back for You on Zoomer Radio. Let's go to the phones, and here is Erica from Ajax. Erica, your thoughts on love and marriage?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Well, kudos to all of us who've been married at least 25 years or more.
Okay,
congratulations.
Fair
enough.
Exactly. My husband and I, before we got married, we dated for 10 years, and my in-laws with three of their other couple friends took us out for dinner,
yeah.
and there was each of the couples had been married minimum 40 years. So we asked every one of those couples, what was the secret to a long marriage?
Yeah.
And the one that's always stuck out in our mind is, remember each other's passions and let everything else slide. Respect is also in there, too. So my husband being the hobby guy and the toys and planes and trains guy, I was the country queen of crafting. So he let me do my passion. I let him do his passion. Now, he's a numbers guy, and I'm in the healthcare, so we're totally apart from each other.
Right.
But those are the things that was the one thing that stuck out with both of us is the passion that each of us has for something in our own personal lives.
Well,
that
and
we
being
bring with us into the marriage,
and recognizing that each of you, even though you may be married, each of you has your own life to live.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah. Yeah.
And respect.
I don't know what the secrets are, but boy,
it's
not an easy haul, and you have to have communication. That was the second thing that Lauren Fine said. You've got to have communication, because I think that will enable you to carry on through all those other areas that could possibly lead to divorce.
I have one to ask you about. What about sense of humor?
Oh, my husband has, if not the worst, the best sense of humor, and my daughter has picked up on it. The two of them together, the bits with each other, and it's just nuts sometimes.
Well, then,
two of them think.
What about your sense of humor? You got to have one, too.
Well, I put up with the sense of humor. Mine's not as dry as theirs. He's a Monty Python type of sense of humor, if you get my drift.
I get your drift. Thanks, Erica. Thanks very much. I think sense of humor in a lot of relationships, whether it's marriage, common law, or just a friendship, sense of humor is a pretty good thing
key.
To have, isn't it?
A sense of humor, you know, respect is very important. Respect,
exactly.
You know,
because life,
she respects her spouse and the spouse respects her.
Because life is basically, when you get right down to it, even with its challenges and its difficulty, life is kind of funny, isn't it?
It should be funny.
Yeah.
you have to find the humor in everything, right? And you have to appreciate your life.
Yeah.
You have to appreciate those around you, and it's always good to laugh.
Okay. Here's Vi on the line from St. Catharines. Vi, your question, please, for Lauren Fine.
Well, I have two or several.
All right.
My question is, going through divorce court, and there's a firm involved, should the gentleman get nothing? Nothing, and I think he had to pay money as well, $100,000 or something. Now, I could be wrong here, but does that sound right to you?
I'm not really sure what the question is.
I don't think we're following you.
Okay, when you go through divorce court and the couple have a firm, there's a farm involved.
A farm?
F-A-R-M.
Farm. A farm. Okay, right, okay.
Should she get everything, the farm plus a cash settlement? And I'll go on then. And should a man have to work when he feels that all he's working for is child support, he pays the income tax on the child support, and then the income tax and everything. He feels he's working just for those reasons. And in fact, he's been advised to go on welfare. This is a professional man.
Okay, but those are really two different things. You're first asking about what, the wife getting the
everything.
Farm and everything, and the husband winds up with zilch? Nothing?
Right.
Okay, that's wrong. That doesn't seem right.
Doesn't sound right,
does
it?
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more to this than what you're saying.
You're speaking of someone you know?
It's someone I know.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that they own a farm and that the husband had to pay $100,000 to the wife. And as we said before, the purpose or the goal of the Family Law Act is to equalize their net family property, so they both walk away with the same amount of money at the end of the day. And obviously, it's not that one spouse gets everything and the other spouse gets nothing. That's not what the act does. So something seems wrong.
Okay, but now I think the lawyers in Toronto want $30,000 down payment to. What do you call this? What am I thinking?
A retainer.
No. Yes, but to take it
Well, hang on, Vi, we need a little more information here. We're kind of off in the weeds. Has this taken place already?
It has taken place.
The divorce has been finalized?
Yes.
Okay.
And everything wasn't equalized out, as
okay.
far as I know.
And let me just try to guide you a bit. And the other question was, he is still paying child support? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yes. Okay. Plus, the men, they pay the income tax on the child support as well.
Yeah, well, it's income, yeah.
Well, no, let's stop you there for a second. So child support is based on the payor's line 150 income, or their gross income before taxes. So there's a whole chart that sets out how much support you would pay based on your income and how many kids there are.
Yeah.
So again, it's a chart that's calculated so that the amount paid is reasonable. There's no reason for a payor to go on welfare. That makes no sense to me. Unless he's self-employed and a court imputed income to him and he says, I can't afford how much income you've imputed to me. Still, it doesn't make sense for him to go on welfare.
Okay. This is his accountant. And he worked overtime to try and pay off some of his bills and the He said, you know what? You're just defeating your purpose because you can't win in this case.
He's getting advice. Well, just give it up and go on welfare.
Sounds like he's telling,
And then you don't have to worry about
paying support.
Paying support. That's how you get it. I mean, you've heard that story
before. Yeah, we've
heard
it, sure, many
times. That kind of thing happens, right?
Well, and the answer is, if you go on welfare, a judge is going to say, no, you can't. If you go on welfare, if you leave your job and you quit, and you're saying the support is too much, and I'm going on welfare, the judge is going to say, you know what? You still have to pay support based on what you could be earning. A judge could impute income to you, and you would still pay support based on that income.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Going on welfare is not the solution.
Vi, I'm totally out of time, but thank you very much. That's a very complicated one, but it sounds like something went off the rails there. That essentially is not how it's supposed to work if those, in fact, are the exact...
So we're not getting the whole story. There's something that's missing.
Well, no, because supposedly it would work out to each other's mutual benefit a little more than that.
Yeah, this is too lopsided. Yeah, that seems something's
wrong. You don't see that many cases where it's a zero-sum game.
Oh,
one side
doesn't
loses,
happen.
The other side wins.
Right. That's not what happens.
Yeah. Lauren, thanks very much for answering all your questions and taking us through
this. It's been an hour already. I can't believe it's been so long.
Yeah, that's right.
It's very complicated. You know,
yes.
Listeners can go on my website, torontodivorcelaw.com, and get information.
All right. Lauren, thank you very much
for coming
in. All right. That's Lauren Fine, our resident family law expert and divorce lawyer.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.